welcome in, everybody, to the April edition of the Sportslandia show here on KXRW.FM and KXRW 99.9 in Vancouver. A lot to get to this month, just Darren and Austin with you, no guests this time around, but an exciting April, a lot we're going to look at here from both the college and professional scene. I know March is behind us. Congratulations to the Kansas Jayhawks as an alumnus of a college that was an arch nemesis of Kansas, it pains me to say, but congratulations to them and capping off a wonderful tournament. Austin, we know you're not the biggest college basketball fan in the world, but did you at least get to fill out a bracket?
I didn't even get to fill out a bracket this year. You know, I say that I was gonna, but I didn't have the time to do it. And honestly, thank God I didn't, because I would have not predicted anything correctly. I would have had Gonzaga going to the finals. I would have had North Carolina losing to the number one seed. I would have had all that stuff wrong. And I don't think anybody could have predicted St. Peter's. So you know what? I'm happy I didn't, because I got to keep all my money in my bank account.
All in all, I felt like it did live up to the March Madness moniker. After a couple down years and a couple down college basketball seasons, I felt like it really shot back into form this year. A fantastic tournament, a lot of upsets, great games. No matter when you turn the TV on, there was going to be a great game. I picked Villanova to make a run and came up a little bit short there, but I don't feel too bad about it for the end product that we got. You had USC, UCLA, and Arizona carrying the Pac-12 banner, and then kind of, we'll give Gonzaga an honorary Pac-12 inclusion here. A lot of teams you expected to make deep runs and really didn't come up the way that those of us on the West Coast would have expected. I feel like it'd be great to have Gonzaga reach that mountaintop. They've been so close. Now we just expect them to be the Elite Eight, and a lot of people had Gonzaga and Arizona to be in their championship, if not win the whole thing. Let's go Zags. We all want to see the Zags finally win the big one. A bit of a weird year for the Pac-12, seeing Oregon, Oregon State, Washington, and Washington State all down, but I don't foresee that lasting too long. I think the Pac-12 is back on the upswing. I think USC and UCLA will stick around. It'll be interesting to see what Arizona does with this new regime, and I think the schools in our neck of the woods are going to bounce back. So I think the Pac-12 is in good shape. One rough year, but I would not be shocked if we have 6 or 7 legitimate contenders next year. We turn the page to the transfer portal. It's a whole new college game than it was a couple of years ago, but it could be very exciting to see what players leave or what players come in via the transfer portal, and we could have a completely different landscape. But watch out for the Pac-12 basketball next season.
Yeah, and you know what? The Pac-12, it was weird last year because they changed commissioners right before the Pac-12 tournament, or right before the NCAA tournament happened. All of a sudden, I think we had like 4 teams in the Sweet 16. So I don't know. I'm praying that that wasn't the unicorn year and that we actually can get, you know, some more balance and some more teams that are going to be, you know, of the higher caliber. Because as it stands right now, obviously we know Arizona is going to be, they're going to be a strong program. Oregon's been a little up and down, but they've definitely been a little more up and down. But I do expect the Pac-12 to, you know, be stronger as it goes forward. But as you said, the Blue Bloods, and it's interesting to me that we talk about Blue Bloods because Kentucky is feeling a little bit left out of that conversation right now. And do we consider Kentucky to actually be a Blue Blood of college basketball? Or have they just been good because John Calipari was amazing at the one and done for a few years? What do you think about that?
It's an interesting conversation about what makes a blue blood. You have Kansas and Kentucky, North Carolina, Duke. I would consider them the big four. But you look at Duke and Kentucky, they were kind of the first ones, especially Kentucky. You think back to that 2012-ish era, I want to say, with Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, the Harrison twins. I think that was the team that ran the table and just crushed everybody, and that was kind of the first super team of one and dones. Kentucky hasn't been the same since. Everybody, I think, caught up to Coach Calipari. Krzyzewski at Duke stayed away from one and dones for a long time. He's now become a one and done factory. But a lot of these places, you think like Ben Simmons went to LSU, Oregon's going to get a guy or two, Jalen Suggs and Chet Holmgren coming to Gonzaga. A lot of these real top five-star guys that seem to want to be the guy, so you don't get a team like Kentucky just bogarting all of the top players. So I think they've kind of regressed back to the pack. There's a stat I think they showed during March Madness that Villanova, Michigan, and Gonzaga have the most tournament wins in the last 20 years. But we don't really think of them as blue bloods on that same tier. But then you have a UCLA or an Indiana, maybe even Arizona, who have not been as great as they were. But I think that blue blood status is earned over time. You have to sustain it. Even if you've been bad in the last 10 years, you have the 50 previous years of history to back you up.
Yeah, but I love Gonzaga basketball. Don't get me wrong. But at what point do we not? I mean, I almost feel like they're like a better version of Boise State. Like, they're going to be good every season, but until they really compete and win a championship, like, I don't know that we could really ever consider them a blue blood of college basketball. Yes, they're amazing. Yes, they have, you know, they are going to have basketball players that come out, and they had Chet Holmgren this year, and they had, I forget the guys that game last year, who was amazing playing in the NBA right now. But at the end of the day, like, they play in a relatively weak conference compared to the likes of the SEC or the ACC. And I haven't seen them go to the Final Four or I guess they lost in the championship game last year, but like, I don't really know them to be like a blue blood like the rest of the programs. I just don't see it.
I would agree with that. As much as I love Gonzaga, we all love Gonzaga, I do think you need that championship to put you over the top, to at least be in that conversation. They could very well win one and end up like UNLV or Houston, but if they sprinkle in a couple championships, hopefully they can keep Mark Few around even longer, finally get to the top of the mountain. I would love to see Gonzaga up there and be considered a blue blood, but you need at least one championship, if not a couple, to be in that conversation. And before we get into our next topic, we're going to take our first quick commercial break, and we're going to be right back and talk a little bit about the NFL offseason and the looming NFL draft.
Basketball season is underway and erupting in Vancouver. The Vancouver Volcanoes are welcoming back fans to the O'Connell Sports Center at Clark College in Vancouver, Washington. The Vancouver Volcanoes are a non-profit sports entertainment basketball club dedicated to helping our players develop into professionals on and off the court, growing new basketball fans, and providing great entertainment, value, and service for the community. Come on out for some exciting family-friendly entertainment and enjoy the sights and sounds of local basketball at is best. For tip-off times, tickets, and complete schedule, go to www.vancouvervolcanoes.com.
Welcome back. And when we talk about the NFL offseason, for Pacific Northwest fans, we know what it's all about, the Russell Wilson trade. That wound still fresh enough to hurt a little bit, even with the NFL draft a week away and some moves being made since then. The Seahawks trading Russell Wilson to the Denver Broncos brought back Drew Lock, who may be the quarterback of the future. I still wouldn't be shocked if they pick somebody in the draft or maybe go after a Baker Mayfield. They also got a first-round pick, which is huge for them, to get a top-10 pick. We remember with the Jamal Adams trade from a couple of years ago, the Seahawks lost several first-round picks. But you get Drew Lock, you get Noah Fant, who is a starting tight end. Pete Carroll has always been great with tight ends, so I think Noah Fant will thrive here. Plus, you get some picks back, which is huge for Seattle. I would say Seahawk fans, buckle up. This is going to be a long year. You still have John Schneider and Pete Carroll, so you have some continuity there at the head of the organization. But I would not be shocked to see the Seahawks in for a long 17 games and to be back at the top of the draft. What say you, good sir?
You know, it's interesting that you say that they're going to still have some success, because I don't know that I really – and again, we're not a hot takey show, but I would argue that they weren't very successful last year either. And so, you know, what is really the goal with the Seahawks? You know, I don't know, because as it stands right now in the NFL, there's not a lot of defensive coaches that are really going to have – that are long-tenured coaches in the – like, you look at Mike Zimmer, I think he probably was the longest – at Pete Carroll obviously has been around for a long time, but the new revolution of head coaches and the new revolution of offenses is just kind of showing that, like, that archaic I formation, run the ball 65% of the time and let your quarterback, you know, go down at the end of the game and win it for you, just isn't kind of the game that we're going to play anymore. I mean, we saw the Chiefs and the Bills, I think they scored 4 or 5 times under 2 minutes, right? So you kind of need to have that explosion. You got to have those high ceilings when it comes to a quarterback. And so I don't know what their goal or what their plan is necessarily, but I'm not sure that Pete Carroll even really is going to be somebody that's going to want to stay around for that much longer, or they're going to want to have him stay around for that much longer if they choose to really go after a Super Bowl championship.
I don't think Pete Carroll is long for this world. I think he's about 71. I don't know why that number sticks in my head, but I think he's the oldest coach in the league and maybe a bit archaic. I still like him. I think they're going to see what they can do in life with that. Russell Wilson, too. Pete Carroll has to work with without Russell Wilson. For the time being, you've still got DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Jamal Adams. So the cupboard's not bare. They're not going to be 1-16 Jacksonville or Detroit bad. I would just be shocked if they get to more than six wins, and that's definitely not anywhere near contention. But you see this happen all the time. You get a whole new regime come in. We'll see what happens with ownership if they want to get rid of Carroll and Schneider. You're probably going to be drafting high next year. Is there a Bryce Young out of Alabama, a quarterback of that ilk? Maybe DJU coming out of Clemson. We'll see how he develops. So I could see that being a thing where Pete Carroll, you'd hate to see him go out on a bad season after everything he's done for the Seahawks, but I would agree. I don't think he's too long for this world in the NFL, at least with Seattle. I could see somebody else giving him a shot, but I'd be shocked if he gets more than a couple years, if this may be his last ride with the Seahawks.
And it's hard to say, right? Because part of it, like Russell Wilson, I do believe in a modern offense could honestly be probably pretty successful, right? With the option of football and getting him on the edge and all the RPOs and everything like that. I think that he could be pretty relatively successful in that kind of offense. But the problem is, I don't know that Pete Carroll was willing to, you know, go and change his philosophy so much so that that was going to be what they were going to be running. And so it kind of, you know, that's part of why I do know a handful of Seahawks fans that were ready for Russell Wilson to leave. And I know a handful of Seahawks fans that were disappointed that he left. But I also do think that the time in Seattle had run its course, just because, you know, there was just a split in philosophy and a split in desire of what they really wanted to do. And then you talk about Let Russ Cook. Well, Let Russ Cook isn't necessarily vetting him pass the ball 45 times a game, because that's not what he's good at. So I do hope that he has a good stint in Denver. I do think that Denver has a really solid roster. It's unfortunate that they played now would probably to be considered the toughest division in football. I think they have three out of the top three quarterbacks that are probably in the top 10, right? And then wherever you put Derek Carr, he could also potentially make it in there as well. So that's going to be a tough place for him to play. And I don't necessarily know why he'd want to play there, but that was his decision. And the Seahawks got a good set of picks from it. So I think it'll work out on both sides.
So put your GM hat on. I want to play a bit of a game here with some rapid fire questions. So for the Seahawks, the quarterback position, your option A, you stick with Drew Lock, you see what he has, and maybe you give him a year to lead the ship, see if he can make things right. Option B, you go for one of the veteran quarterbacks who is likely available. The first one that comes to mind is Baker Mayfield, now that the Browns have Deshaun Watson. He clearly doesn't want to be there. He feels disrespected, but I think he's still a worthwhile starter in this league. I think the Browns are going to send him somewhere. The other option there is Jimmy Garoppolo, but I cannot imagine the 49ers trading him in the division unless the Seahawks give up a mountain of picks and prospects for him. And then option C is you look to the drafts. You're sitting there at 9 for your first pick. Maybe the only team that would pick one ahead of you would be the Panthers. But if you've got a Malik Willis, a Matt Corral, a Kenny Pickett, somebody sitting there, or maybe you wait and somebody like a Sam Howell or a Desmond Ridder falls. So what would you do? Your option A, stick with Drew Lock. Option B, go get a veteran like a Baker or a Jimmy G. Or C, you look to the draft.
Yeah, so my philosophy on this actually has changed a little bit over time, especially because we watched the Rams kind of put together an all-star team, and they were able to go and win the Super Bowl. But from what I've learned and kind of what I've noticed is you want to go after a proven commodity. And so going after somebody in the draft, they're not necessarily a proven commodity. They could be amazing. They could also not be very good, right? We've seen both sides. Like you look at, for example, Josh Rosen, who was, I think, drafted 11th or 12th overall, and he ended up playing on two teams in 3 years, and now he's like a forever backup. So if I were the Seahawks, I would go after Baker Mayfield. Not to say that he's amazing, but he's a proven commodity. He's won. He's made it to the playoffs. Yeah, there might be a couple extra things that you have to deal with, and he may not be a championship-level quarterback, or, you know, that's maybe to be determined. But at this point, like, we've never seen Kenny Pickett throw an NFL ball to an NFL receiver, right? Or Malik Jackson. We haven't seen it. We haven't seen that. So to us, that's unproven. And then we have all seen what Drew Lock has done. And he's played enough years in Denver for us to see, well, if he has the ability to win games, like, we don't know, right? Because he hasn't been able to do that. So if I were the Seahawks, I think the best move for them would be figuring out a trade, getting something in return for Baker Mayfield, just because, again, it's maybe may not be the most glamorous quarterback, but he's proven that he can win in the NFL. He's proven that he can throw for a lot of yards in the NFL, and he won a playoff game last year. So that's not something that is that a lot of quarterbacks can say, and he can. So if I were the Seahawks, that would be the move that I would go after.
I do wonder what the Browns think they can get back for Baker Mayfield, because when you look around the league right now, Seattle is one of the logical landing spots with a quarterback hole. I do think the Browns, if they could, would like to get him out of the AFC and send him to the NFC. Seattle's a logical situation, but I wonder what they're expecting to get back. I can't imagine you give up that number 9 pick or any first-round pick for him. I believe Seattle also has two picks, 40 and 41 maybe. You could give up one of those and maybe a future pick or a second and a fourth or fifth. You're going to have to give a package of picks to get him back. So we'll see how interested Seattle is and if both parties can agree. That number 9, this is such a rich offensive line class that you cannot give that up, whether or not it's an Evan Neal, a Charles Cross, a Ikem Ekwonu, or a Tyler Linderbaum, somebody of that ilk, if they're sitting there at 9. We know that the Seahawks team, what they've been plagued by for the last couple of years, is holes on that offensive line. No matter who's back there under center, if that line isn't improved, they're going to get eaten alive. I think Seattle's made some nice steps here in the offseason to work in that direction, but you could be looking at a couple perennial Pro Bowlers and some All-Pros at the top of this draft class that I think if they're there at 9, you have to go get them. You can't risk giving up that pick.
Yeah, and even still, like, this is a relatively strong class when it comes to the rush end also. And those are basically, like, the two positions now that are so highly valued that if you're going to have a number 9 pick, you've got to get someone like that. So, yeah, I don't know that they would give up that pick necessarily. And I don't know if they have enough pieces to trade for Baker Mayfield, you know, maybe a player or two. But also at the same time, like, it's hard to say. So, but again, in my opinion, you want to go after proven commodities because you look at the Rams model and – it's definitely a copycat league, and so, you know, we'll see if they do it. But that's I would venture to guess that would be the highest move, unless they want to just stick it out with Drew Lock, and that might actually be something that they do just because Pete Carroll wants to have that subdued personality in the locker room, somebody that's going to kind of fall into the system that they want to run, not really cause too much chaos, and kind of just, you know, stay online with the philosophy that they have in place as we stand.
So I know he is persona non grata right now in this part of the country, but what do you see the future like for Russell Wilson in Denver, playing in what's arguably the best division, but the best quarterbacking division? Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, and Derek Carr. People can say what they will about Derek Carr, but he's a top 15 quarterback in this league. And when he's the worst quarterback in your division is doing something right. And he's now got Devontae Adams to throw to. So how do you see the 2022 season and beyond going for Mr. Wilson in the Mile High City?
Yeah, you know, I really do like the Broncos roster. And I think, I don't know that it's going to be as good of it. As a team that won the Super Bowl with Von Miller and all those guys that they had where they had a good defense there and they picked up Peyton Manning. Now, we don't want to compare Peyton Manning and Russell Wilson, but it's the same kind of elite level quarterback that they wanted to pick up to combine with a defense that they have already in place. So, you know, it's hard to sell. Nathaniel Hackett, I think, is going to be a good addition, right? I think he's going to be a really good coach for them as well. But he's younger, and he still has a lot to prove. And so I do think that he's going to have a lot more success just because I think Nathaniel Hackett's going to be able to have a more of a modern-day offense that's going to really work in Russell Wilson's favor. I think that was probably part of the deal with him coming over there was that he wanted to play in a modern-day offense that was going to allow him to move. Allow him to play on the edge, allow him to use his legs a little bit more than he was able to do in Seattle. Also playing behind a stronger offensive line makes a really big deal. And so I do believe that he's going to have a lot more success there. Now, again, as we mentioned, I think they were 5-13 this last year. When you have 6 games, you got to play against 2 against Patrick Mahomes and 2 against Derek Carr and 2 against Justin Herbert. Good luck. So who knows, like, that division is such like that the worst team in that division might have 8 wins.
Right.
And so, you know, you, it's hard to, like, you, like, they could have 8-9 wins and not make it to the playoffs. And so I do think that he's going to be more successful than he was in Seattle. But again, as we mentioned, like, that's the toughest division of football, especially with the defensive additions that they've been going into that division as well. Right now, because now San Diego has two, like, Pro Bowl rush ends, right? Like, it's ridiculous. And so it's just going to be really hard for him to win the division. But I do think that he will be more successful than he was in his last couple of years in Seattle.
We need to figure out if this is mathematically possible. Could you get all four teams from one division into the playoffs now that you have seven teams?
I do think that that probably would be possible.
Because the AFC South is going to be about it. The AFC South, well, now the Colts may be better, but I was thinking the South will be bad. I don't know how great the East will be outside of the Bills.
I think Miami will be okay, right?
That's true. They have signed every free agent this year.
Yeah, well, they need a quarterback to be able to throw to him, and who that's still to be determined. Well, I love Tua, but he still has not been amazing yet. So, and as far as we've seen, he could potentially make the playoffs, but you have to have a high ceiling in order to even win some playoff games.
If the Dolphins don't think Tua is their future, they may be looking to the NFL draft for their next quarterback. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the NFL draft and some of the local prospects here coming up after our commercial break. Stay tuned.
Basketball season is underway and erupting in Vancouver. The Vancouver Volcanoes are welcoming back fans to the O'Connell Sports Center at Clark College in Vancouver, Washington. The Vancouver Volcanoes are a nonprofit sports entertainment basketball club dedicated to helping our players develop into professionals on and off the court, growing new basketball fans, and providing great entertainment, value, and service for the community. Come on out for some exciting family-friendly entertainment and enjoy the sights and sounds of local basketball at its best. For tip-off times, tickets, and complete schedule, go to www.vancouvervolcanoes.com.
Welcome back, and we want to take a couple minutes here to highlight some of the local college players who we expect to be drafted pretty high here in the NFL draft. And that list begins with Kayvon Thibodeau, the defensive end out of Oregon, one of the top recruits in the country coming out of high school, and had a decent career at Oregon. Some injuries and some missed time this year may have taken some of the shine off of him. Coming into this year's draft, it felt like he was the consensus number one pick, and best case scenario, he ends up looking about as good as one of the Bosa brothers. I think kind of his floor would be a Jadeveon Clowney, which, when you're going to build a modern defensive end, he's going to look like Kayvon Thibodeau. He's tall, he's long, he's quick off the snap. That's the biggest thing about him that people love, that first step speed that he has. He can blow by offensive tackles. The criticism that the professionals who do this for a living is the motor high enough? Is the engagement there on every play? That's why it feels like he's kind of slipped down the boards. When I've looked at some and kind of just looking at the draft order, I don't think he gets past those New York teams. I think the Giants at 5 would be my favorite spot. But the Giants with 2 picks, the Jets with 2 picks, almost every team needs a top-level rush end. So I don't think Thibodeau falls out of the top 10. I think he's out of the conversation for the top overall. I think 5 is a good spot for him, but for sure in the top 10. And then you go down, and there's a couple defensive backs out of Washington that have really been flying up the boards here through the combine and the pro days since the season has ended, and the main one is Trent McDuffie, only as a sophomore, but 5'11", 193, your prototypical cornerback size, and really kind of quality coaching up there at Washington in the defensive back, so do not be surprised if Trent McDuffie goes in that first round. I thought he was kind of a fringe guy for day one. I thought he was more of a high second-round pick, but it seems he's probably almost a lock to go in the latter half of the first round now once you get beyond the top two guys, Derek Stingley and Sauce Gardner. The third best cornerback position is really wide open. And then you also have his teammate, Kyler Gordon, a defensive back, almost the exact same size, also a sophomore. So these two guys, you could be looking at two Washington Husky cornerbacks going in the top 40 of the draft. So those are just kind of your top names to look at: Oregon, Washington, Washington State, Oregon State. All these schools put guys in the NFL every single year, but I think those are the top three to watch for, with Thibodeau, McDuffie, and Kyler Gordon are going to be the guys to watch in the first night or first 2 days of the NFL draft.
Yeah, and he's someone, obviously he's California born, but he is somebody that has for sure been an Oregon favorite for a long time. And so he's somebody that, along with Aiden Hutchinson, again, like there is something to be said about having a superstar defensive end on an NFL roster. Like that can change the game. We all kind of saw what TJ Watt has done for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think that in every win, I think they said in every win that the Steelers had this year, TJ Watt had a game-changing play in the fourth quarter. So that just goes to show you that if you can find the right guy, then he can manipulate and change the game and change the pass protection and win games. And that is also money. That is also playoffs. There's a lot of that comes along with that. So regardless of the motor and some of the issues that people do talk about, I do believe that, you know, Kayvon Thibodeaux has been fun to watch at Oregon, and he'll be fun to watch in the NFL for a really long time.
For our last few minutes of the show here this month, I want to talk a little bit about the Blazers' impending free agency. We'll talk about this a little bit more as we get into the summer, but looking at where they're at right now, to start wetting our whistle, the rough season has come to a close. We know they're going to have a quality draft pick and what I think will be a fantastic NBA draft. I think we're going to look back at this as a historic draft that's going to turn out a lot of quality starters and all-stars. So I think the Blazers are in a good situation with a high draft pick. We'll see how the lottery shakes out. But a very interesting offseason ahead. I won't get into my theories about trading Damian Lillard. I think that's a very real possibility for them. If they're able to keep Dame, it's interesting to look at what pieces they will have to bring back or could bring back. You do have Yusuf Nurkic will be a free agent. I think that's the big one. He was making $12 million this year. Somebody's going to have to pay him that or more. I think a lot of teams would love to have an athletic scoring big like Nurk on their team. Then you also have Anfernee Simons, who I think somebody's going to be willing to sign a huge deal with for. They have a qualifying offer on him right now. So if somebody comes calling, would he want to go somewhere where he can be the guy and finally see what it's like to really run the show instead of kind of filling in for Dame? But you could also bring back a lot of quality role players. I know this team didn't inspire a lot of hope this year, but you need an all-star. If you're going to compete in the NBA, you need at least one all-star. I think a lot of solid role players for the Blazers. Eric Bledsoe could be coming back. Josh Hart, Nasir Little, Justice Winslow. There's a lot of good role players and third, fourth scoring options for this team. So I don't think the cupboard is bare. You really have to answer the questions on what do you do with Nurkic and Simons. If you can bring back those role players and you can keep Damian, this team has a lot of money available. They're pretty high up there in the available cap. Not the best free agent class coming, but if you could get a Zach LaVine to come to town, maybe a Bradley Beal and Lillard together is an interesting pairing. But if you could go maybe find a dominant big to work and let Dame do his thing on the outside, this could be a very interesting offseason for the Blazers. Again, we'll break it down here in the coming months. But what do you see as we look ahead into the NBA offseason?
Yeah, and I think you nailed it. The Blazers, for whatever reason, for the last 5 or 6 years have been very, very guard heavy. I mean, you look at even the years when they had Dame and CJ, and they just kind of have always been guard-led, guard-heavy, and that's just kind of been the basis of their team. So if I were them, you know, and maybe they get a little gun-shy because they've had a couple centers that have been busted out in the past, but you know, I look at a guy like Chet Holmgren, someone that has a shooter, long, lanky skill set, tall, that could really be a game changer. So who knows if he goes number one, number two overall, how early he really is projected, because he is projected to go in one of those top spots. But if they have the ability to go after somebody like him, I do think that also that adds a lot of leg to their set, of course, but it also adds quite a bit of skill to what they're trying to do as well. So I think if you want to talk about guard play, if you want to talk about length, because he's more of a wing player than a guard player, I think he fits in well with what they're trying to do. And so if I were them, that would be somebody. And he is obviously, too, somebody who plays at Gonzaga. So it's a well-known household name when it comes to the Pacific Northwest. So if I were them, that's the guy I'd go after.
I agree with you on Chet Holmgren. If you're a Blazers fan, you should be excited about the prospect of getting him or one of the other bigs in this class. I think this is going to be a great class for the big men. We'll analyze that a little bit more, talk about the potential mock draft options. Hopefully we know the lottery order and draft order by the time the next episode hits for us. But we are up against the clock here for this month's episode. Sorry, Mariners fans, we had it planned to talk about your team, but we'll get to them in June. Thank you all for joining us on Sportslandia Volume 4 here in Vancouver at KXRW.FM and 99.9 FM. We'll see you next time.